This is VOA News. I'm David Byrd. President Donald Trump spent Thursday reveling in his impeachment acquittal and taking aim at those he said did him wrong. We get details on the President's Day from AP's Sagar Meghani.
In a packed East Room, the President held up a newspaper headline reading acquitted, insisting the House impeachment charges against him were illegitimate.
We went through hell. Unfairly, did nothing wrong.
And blasting those he says did wrong, from FBI officials to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
These are the crookedest, most dishonest, dirtiest people I've ever seen.
His victory lap began at the National Prayer Breakfast, where he railed about people trying to destroy him, stunning the crowd at a normally bipartisan event, including Pelosi, who shook her head.
It was just so completely inappropriate, especially at a prayer breakfast.
Sagar Meghani at the White House.
The head of the Democratic Party is now calling for a do-over in Iowa after technical issues and delays have muddied the results of Monday's caucuses. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Democratic National Committee Chairman Tom Perez says a recanvass is needed to assure public confidence after technical issues and delays. He says enough is enough. With almost all the precincts reporting, it appears Pete Buttigieg and Senator Bernie Sanders are tied for the lead. But with missing data and numerous errors reported, the Associated Press is unable to declare a winner. President Trump has seized on the chaos, saying Democrats want to take over health care, but they can't even count simple votes. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
For more on these stories and the rest of the day's news, be sure to tune to our website, voanews.com. You can also follow us on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. Chinese state television reports the number of deaths from a coronavirus outbreak has risen to more than 600 as of Thursday. As AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports, the doctor who first reported the virus is one of them.
A doctor in China who was among the first to warn about the coronavirus outbreak has died after coming down with the illness. Wuhan Central Hospital says on its social media account, Dr. Li Wenliang was unfortunately infected during the fight against the pneumonia epidemic of the new coronavirus infection. The statement says Li was 34 years old. According to news reports, Li was reprimanded by local police for allegedly spreading rumors about the illness in late December. The outbreak centered in Wuhan has now infected over 31,000 people globally and killed more than 600. I'm Mike Gracia.
A British monitoring group says Israeli missile strikes killed at least 23 pro-Iranian fighters near Damascus Thursday. Israel is not commenting, but Syrian state media said their air defense repelled a number of attacks. We get details from Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
The Syrian state news agency said that Syrian troops shot down a number of missiles. But Rami Abdurrahman of the British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says there is more to the story. He said at least 23 fighters were killed, possibly including some Iranians, and that the missiles caused extensive damage. In the past, Israel has confirmed similar airstrikes, saying that Israel will not allow Iran to expand its control of Syria and will not allow weapons convoys to Hezbollah in Lebanon. This time, Israel did not confirm or deny its involvement in the air assault, perhaps due to the high reported death toll. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Prosecutors rested their case in former Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein's rape trial in New York Thursday. Weinstein's lawyers have begun their defense. We get more from AP's Ed Donahue.
Jurors heard from six women over more than 2 weeks. Some said they kept saying no, 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 but Weinstein ignored them. Others say he justified his behavior by saying that that was the way to get by in Hollywood. Now the defense will call witnesses. His team has not said yet if Weinstein himself will testify. Harvey Weinstein's attorney, Donna Rotuno, immediately asked the judge to dismiss the case. The judge said no. The defense is looking to raise doubts about the women's recollections of encounters with Weinstein that in some cases are more than a decade or two old. He has maintained any sexual encounters were consensual. I'm Ed Donahue.
A record day again on Wall Street, with the Dow Jones Industrials up 0.3%. The S&P was up 0.33%. The NASDAQ gained 0.2%. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Residents flee Cameroon's English-speaking regions as separatists impose a travel ban ahead of Sunday's parliamentary election.
The military suspected that Ikata is a stronghold for the separatist fighters. That is why they attacked and killed indiscriminately. So as we speak, the area has been deserted.
Some Malawi members of parliament who lost their seats during last year's general election are demanding a new election. Zimbabwe refugees lose their fight to remain in Botswana. Human rights groups say Italy is complicit in the abuse of immigrants in Libya, and supporters of former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo have again urged his unconditional release from the ICC.
To be able to have the right to go to and fro is a fundamental right for human beings. And Mr. Gbagbo has the right to do whatever he wants to do from the moment he has been acquitted by this ICC.
Jean-Yves Chaïde is the vice president for finance of the Ivorian Popular Front Party. And Ugandan health officials quarantine at least 100 people returning from China over the deadly coronavirus. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Economic activity is at a standstill in northwest, southwest Cameroon as separatist fighters have imposed a travel ban and vowed that local and parliamentary elections set for Sunday will not take place there. Civilians say they do not believe the government will be able to protect them from separatists who have been abducting candidates, election officials, and people found with voting cards. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Bamenda, Cameroon.
54-year-old teacher Peter Nanje is driving out of Bamenda with his wife and three children. He says he is escaping to the town of Bafusam, some 90 kilometers away, because his neighborhood, Ikata, was attacked by Cameroon's military on Thursday morning.
The military suspected that Ikata is a stronghold for the separatist fighters. That is why they attacked and killed indiscriminately. So as we speak, the area has been deserted.
Nanji said at least 9 people, including his landlord, were killed. Meanwhile, 32-year-old trader Nuela Zimba is waiting for a bus to leave Bamenda. She says she previously fled the northwestern town of Bafut following heavy clashes between the military and separatist fighters.
As election day is approaching, the violence is increasing. Government on its side is deploying more military to the northwest and southwest regions, and so there's uncertainty.
Most towns and villages in Cameroon's 2 English-speaking regions have become increasingly deserted since the first week in January, when the military launched what it called severe attacks on separatist forces. The separatists have been active too, torching public buildings, including those of elections management body ELECAM. Campaign caravans have been attacked on several occasions, and the opposition Social Democratic Front and the ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement say at least 80 of their supporters and candidates were abducted. The whereabouts of 60 others is unknown. Separatists have claimed responsibility, but promised to release the captives after the polls. Deben Chofo, governor of the Northwest region, says the population should stay put, insisting the government will ensure their security. He adds that the military has been instructed to kill the separatists if they fail to surrender.
I'm sending a strong message to those that could be tempted to disrupt the electoral process, that they should start preparing themselves to face the might of the state.
In spite of the violence and uncertainty, the government of Cameroon has vowed that Sunday's elections must take place. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Bamenda, Cameroon.
In Malawi, some members of parliament who lost their seats during the May 21, 2019 general election are demanding a new election. This follows this week's constitutional court ruling nullifying the results of the 2019 elections and calling for new poll within 150 days from February 3rd. The court blamed the Malawi Electoral Commission for widespread irregularities, which it said compromised the final results. Frank Mwini Fumbo is a member of the Alliance for Democracy Democracy Party, who lost his seat in 2019. He says if the Constitutional Court found serious gaps in the manner in which the Malawi Electoral Commission conducted the 2019 presidential election, then the same must apply to the parliamentary election.
We are not necessarily looking for another election. All what we are doing is to enhance on the verdict that was passed by the Constitutional Court to say that there was a serious misconduct on part of the Malawi Electoral Commission in the way they declared the, in this case, presidential results in the 2019 election. Our argument is that this was one election which had one manager. In this case, Malawi Electoral Commission managed this tripartite election whose components were presidential, parliamentary and the local government election. If the Constitutional Court has found serious gaps in the manner in which the Malawi Electoral Commission conducted the presidential election, then it goes without saying that the same must have applied to parliamentary and council elections, simply because the material that were used in the presidential elections are exactly the same as the material that were used in the parliamentary and the local government elections.
In other words, you are interpreting the Constitutional Court ruling as a sweeping decision, but were you a party to the petition to the court?
Precisely. There's no way they can single out the presidential without it having an effect on the parliamentary and the local government election.
Is this a legal argument you're making? Or, in other words, do you intend to go to court to make this argument? Or you think that when the next elections are scheduled in 150 days, you expect to be on the ballot?
We expect to be on the ballot. As I said, we think that not just logically, but legally, that in Malawi, according to our constitution, it stipulates that the presidential and the parliamentary and local government elections shall be held at once. So you cannot single out a particular election. We would have loved the Constitutional Court should have looked at this as a singular election, despite the fact that we did not submit in our litigations. But the complaint in this case was general. Any misconduct that affected the presidential should affect the parliamentary and also affect the local government elections. And that if there has to be another election, it should be the election in its entirety.
Frank Winnie Fumbo is a member of the Alliance for Democracy Party of Malawi. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. Supporters of former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo have again urged the International Criminal Court, the ICC, to let Mr. Gbagbo return home. Their latest request comes after Mr. Gbagbo's lawyers Thursday asked the ICC to release the former president without conditions while he awaits the prosecution's appeal against his acquittal. Mr. Gbagbo and Charles Blair Goudé, the former youth minister, were acquitted last year for alleged crimes against humanity during Ivory Coast 2010 post-electoral crisis, but they were not allowed to return to Ivory Coast. The new demand for Mr. Gbagbo to return home also comes as Ivory Coast is slated to hold presidential elections in October this year. Jean-Gervais Tchéidé is vice president for finance of Mr. Gbagbo's Ivorian Popular Front Party.
As members of his party, we are denouncing this situation and we are appealing to the International Court to release our president, because this court has been created, as I understand, for two reasons. First reason, to fight against war crime, crime against humanity, and genocide, to punish people who commit such crimes. But the second one, which is also very, very important, is to protect human rights. Now, if the UNO has created a court to protect human rights, it is surprising, it is unacceptable that this court is the one which is violating somebody's right. Because to be able to have the right to go to and fro is a fundamental right for a human being. And Mr. Gbagbo has the right to do whatever he wants to do from the moment he has been acquitted by this ICC.
Elections in Cote d'Ivoire this year, 2020, and there's the possibility that President Ouattara might want to seek another term. Is your party, Mr. Gbagbo's party, going to compete in this year's election?
Yes, we have decided to compete in this election.
The concern that I think people have is that former President Gbagbo still has influence in Cote d'Ivoire, that if he is released, it might impact or affect the election.
But in our constitution, there's no article that says that Mr. Gbagbo has no right to compete. He was sent to prison by the ICCC. Now he has been acquitted. Now it is his right, according to our constitution, to compete if he wants to do so. And the ICCC should not be used for political reasons. So we are trying to make them understand that this is something which is discrediting this court. So Mr. Gbagbo has a very, very big influence in Cote d'Ivoire. I must say that for the election of 2010, in the first term, he came number one with 38% of the ballot. So he is somebody important. And Mr. Ouattara's ruling has given more reasons to people to support Mr. Gbagbo right now. So if elections are organized in Cote d'Ivoire today with a commission which is not dominated by Mr. Ouattara's party, Mr. Gbagbo will win in the first term. There will be no second term.
Georges Gevercheide is the Vice President for Finance of former President Laurent Gbagbo's Ivorian Popular Front Party. He was speaking with us from the Ivorian capital, Abidjan. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, February 7th. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Human rights groups have strongly criticized Italy for extending a deal with Libya that facilitates the return of migrants to detention centers where the migrants say torture and rape are commonplace. The European Union has sent hundreds of millions of dollars to Libya to boost its Coast Guard capabilities and clamp down on human smuggling. But critics say the money is ending up with criminal gangs. Henry Richwell has more.
Awudi Baladuzi shows how his Libyan captors smashed the bones of his hands. The 27-year-old left Ghana in 2015. After reaching Libya, he was kidnapped and sold to traffickers who demanded a ransom for his freedom.
They started beating me every day, asking me to call my parents for the money. See, my hand is broken.
It took Baladuzi 4 years to reach Europe. $1,200 US and a smartphone bought him a place on an overloaded rubber dinghy. They were saved by the Ocean Viking, an aid agency rescue ship. The European Union has sent more than €328 million to Libya, much of it funneled through United Nations agencies to try to halt the flow of migrants across the Mediterranean. The EU money funds the Libyan Coast Guard and also is aimed at disrupting human trafficking networks. Latest figures show the number of arrivals has fallen to its lowest level since 2013, but critics say it has come at huge cost. Claire Daly is an Irish member of the European Parliament.
It is the EU's aerial assets which spot boats in distress, have contacted the Libyan Coast Guard, allowing militias to intercept these people, return them into slavery and trafficking. And we talk about concern for human rights. And it is an absolute doublespeak and hypocrisy, and I'm getting frankly sick of it at these meetings because we hear an awful lot about it. We are the ones culpable in this.
There are growing fears that migrants will be caught up in Libya's civil war after more than 40 migrants were killed in an airstrike on a detention centre in July. Italy this week agreed to a 3-year extension of a deal it struck with Tripoli in 2017 that facilitates the return of migrants to detention centres, where UN officials say detainees are often beaten, raped and starved. Matteo De Bellis is from Amnesty International.
We have to expect 3 more years of interceptions at sea by the Libyan Coast Guard, 3 more years of people being detained in those awful detention centres, 3 more years of Europe looking on the other side, pretending this is not happening, just because this is helping them stop people coming to Europe.
The migrants continue to come. The Ocean Viking rescued over 400 migrants in just 3 days last week. The EU says it is not involved in funding detention centres in Libya and says it is focused on improving conditions for migrants in the country. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
About 60 Zimbabwean refugees have lost their battle to remain in neighboring Botswana. The host government rejected their appeal against repatriation. As Kundise Dube reports from Haburuni, the refugees are reluctant to return to Zimbabwe, citing political persecution.
Most of the refugees fled to Botswana following the often violent 2008 presidential election in Zimbabwe. Some opposition supporters were killed during that campaign, while others were beaten and left homeless. Botswana granted asylum to the fleeing opposition supporters a decade ago. However, in 2017, the United Nations High Commission on Refugees, UNHCR, in collaboration with the two governments, deemed the situation in Zimbabwe safe for the refugees' return. Some of the 700 Zimbabwean refugees were repatriated in December, with at least 367 expected to return this month. But some had requested to remain in Botswana or be repatriated to a third country. Standard Weza says he cannot return home because he fears for his life.
They might claim that Zimbabwe has improved politically whatsoever, but where we come from, in our places where we have been active doing these things, where we have been tortured, there is nothing that has been improved. They do communicate with the head offices of UNHCR in Harare and the government and so on, but they don't go to our rural areas or our urban areas where we come from.
Opposition Movement for Democratic Change, MDC activist Wasu Chibi, is equally concerned about his safety once he returns home. He does not trust Zimbabwe's long ruling ZANU-PF party.
What we are saying here is not a mystery, but it's a reality. Those people who know ZANU-PF since 1980, they will believe what I'm saying. ZANU-PF has made a lot of people disappear. ZANU-PF has killed a lot of people. So we are not an exception to that. And some of us are likely to face treason charges.
Zimbabwe's ambassador to Botswana, Wadera Ise Mukonweshuro, argues there is no reason for fear.
Yes, there are a lot of misconceptions when people are in Turkey because they haven't been home for a long time. There are fears that I've been home for 10 years. Will I be accepted back? Will I find the same people there? That, well, maybe we'll be incarcerated, maybe. For those with their own crimes, fear that the law will immediately take care of whatever.
In rejecting the refugees' request to remain at the Duki refugee camp, the Botswana government said there was no longer a need for continued international protection for the migrants. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Haburuni, Botswana.
Health officials in Uganda have quarantined at least 100 people returning from China, fearing they could easily spread the deadly coronavirus. Ruth Achen, Uganda's Minister of Health, says the quarantined people include both Chinese and Ugandans. Mugumi Davis Rakaringi has more from Kampala.
Jean Ruth Achen, Uganda's Minister of Health, says dozens of people have been confined to stay at their homes for fear they may spread the disease.
We have over 100 people quarantined. Out of the 100, there are 43 Chinese. The rest are Ugandans. Out of these, 3 are students who came in. The numbers are huge. We cannot quarantine everybody in one place because some people may already be incubating. Others may be free. So if we put all of you together, the ones who are free will contract the disease from those who are incubating.
More than 500 people have died of the coronavirus since its outbreak in Wuhan, China, in January, and at least 230 cases have been confirmed outside China. Acheng says her ministry is working with both local and international health partners to ensure the quarantine is effective.
Now, when you're quarantined in your home during the 14 days, our surveillance officers will visit you on a daily basis. They don't tell you the time they are coming to visit you because we are making on-spot checks to see that you are adhering to the quarantine rules.
She also says the ministry has deployed health officials at the Entebbe International Airport and along border entries to make sure those entering the country are screened of the disease. WHO has declared the novel coronavirus outbreak as a public health emergency of international concern. So far, there is no cure or vaccine for the disease. Dr. Jonas Tegan Odamariam, the head of WHO in Uganda, says high levels of hygiene is one way to prevent the disease from spreading.
Washing hands with soap or alcohol-based rubs is important because that's the best way of preventing it. Personal etiquette when you cough is the next most important thing. And if you or anyone has commonly called like symptoms, I think for them not to sneeze into others and make sure that they sneeze into a handkerchief or other means is important.
Coronaviruses are zoonotic, meaning they are transmitted between animals and people. WHO advises people to avoid unnecessary and protected contact with live animals and to make sure they wash their hands thoroughly after contact with animals. People are also advised animal products like meat are cooked thoroughly before consumption. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's posting. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sport with a look at the draws for the 2020 Confederation of African Football Champions League, which took place midweek in Cairo. Defending champions, Esperance of Tunisia, were drawn against five-time winners, Zamalek of Egypt. The two clubs will face each other in the Total CAF Super Cup 2020 on the 14th of February 2020 in Doha, Qatar. Eight-time winners Al Ahly will face Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa in a repeat of last year's quarters clash. DR Congo giant TP Mazembe will be up against Raja Club, whilst Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia will have to contend with Wydad Athletic Club of Morocco. I spoke to some football fans who gave their impressions on the draws.
All the big teams are there. Just watch out. TP Mazembe has the pedigree.
For the CAF Champions League, I'll look at between Al Ahly and Mamelodi Sundowns. I will want to give it to Al Ahly based on pedigree. Raja Casablanca, TP Mazembe, I would also tilt towards Raja Casablanca.
Zamalek vs Esperance, go with Esperance of Tunisia.
In the Total CAF Confederations Cup, Enyimba of Nigeria will face Horoya of Guinea in the quarterfinals, and the winners of the two-leg tie will probably face Pyramid of Egypt in the semifinals. That's because Zanaco of Zambia will face a Herculean task of beating Pyramids in one of the quarterfinal pairings. In the other quarterfinals, Al Masry of Egypt will face Bekane, while Al Nasri of Libya will meet Hassani Agadir, with the two Moroccan clubs favored to advance. Host and defending champions Morocco will face three-time winners Egypt in today's African Cup of Nations futsal final in Lyonnais after thrashing Angola 4-0 in the second semi-final on Friday. This will be a repeat of the last edition in South Africa in 2016, where the Moroccans won 3-2 to clinch their first title. Egypt had earlier booked a slot in the final after hitting Libya 5-2. The two have thus automatically qualified for the 2020 FIFA Futsal World Cup, which will be held in Lithuania. Angola will face Libya in the playoff to determine the third team to join the two finalists at the World Cup. Nike have revealed the follow-up to Nigeria's stunning 2018 World Cup kit, and it certainly doesn't disappoint. On the eve of the 2018 World Cup in Russia, the green and white jersey of the Super Eagles of Nigeria, donned at the tournament, was sold out after just 3 minutes at the Nike's London store and online. Its bold green and black design was hugely popular with both football fans and streetwear enthusiasts, and broke records with 3 million pre-orders for the jersey worldwide before the tournament even started. And finally, in tennis news, 20-time Grand Slam champion Roger Federer will play his first ever match in sub-Saharan Africa in Cape Town later today. Federer's opponent will be 19-time Grand Slam champion and rival Rafael Nadal. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that is it for this Friday, February 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very, very good weekend.
Hi, this is Larry London inviting you to join me on February 14th for Border Crossings Presents Urban Chart Legends. Some of the biggest names in urban music, jazz, R&B, hip-hop. It's all on one program on one day, February 14th. Michael Jackson, Kendrick Lamar, James Brown, and many more. Tune us in starting at 1500 Universal right here on The Voice of America.